Ah, it sounded like I was hearing your thing ringing. Ah, great, there we go. So I can hear you now. how the hell do you turn the camera off on this thing? I'm not used to Hangouts. Ah, oh, great. Plus, I'm actually out on a farm, so internet can be a bit spotty out here. So, less hard work. All right. Okay. Oh, that's perfect. Well, I've done this once before, so at least I know where to start putting it together. So, yeah. what's the time there? Because I'm worried I got the time zones mixed up. Must be what 8 PM if I'm right. Ah, fantastic! There we go. I saw your message about an hour ago. I thought, oh crap, I've got it wrong. how many kids you got, by the way? 2. Ah, oh, nice. Yeah, I know. It's really hard to not be a dick about it. You know, like 2, bliss. You know, shame. Oh damn! I've got to remember that. Hard is hard. Eh? It doesn't matter. Luckily, they're starting to get a bit older and look after each other. So it's not as bad as it used to be. But Well, okay. Well, so this is just me yakking and chatting because interviews are not second nature to me. So I always struggle to get things going. But, I might as well. I'm recording now. Is your stuff on?
Okay, I'm recording as well.
Okay, great. All right. Could you introduce yourself?
Sure. Your listeners are probably wondering, who is Dylan O'Donnell and why should I even care what he has to say, when really there's no reason why you should. I'm just a guy, just like any of you guys out there who probably do a little bit of backyard astronomy. I have had a little bit of success in recent years where I've been published by NASA and I've been commissioned to take photos for the European Space Agency. And my work has gotten out through social media and on mainstream media as well. I am the founder of the Star Stuff Festival here in Australia.
Right.
And just from an academic perspective, I have a master's in information technology, and I've just started my graduate certificate in astronomy as well. I also run the easternmost observatory in Australia, which is the Byron Bay Observatory, far flung on the easternmost cape of Australia, like the edge of the earth.
Wow. Is that a professional observatory then? Is it
not really. I just took the time? Designation and registered the domain name and
so it's like my observatory at home, which is literally just a creosoted wooden pole buried in the ground with a wedge mount bolted to it, and I've listed it on Google Maps as this is the
observatory. Excellent.
Yeah, great fun.
Now, are a Unix systems administrator as well, is that right?
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, it's funny, I don't do much of that professionally anymore. In the sense the day job where they give me money. But definitely, that's what I did for, it was about 15 years now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of us IT guys tend to be attracted to astronomy in general. I know we were introduced by Corey, who's also an IT guy too, but it seems to go hand in hand with the technical side of the astronomy stuff.
Especially with, I got very excited with SKA when we won part of the bid, and I think you guys got the other half. And when I started understanding the data requirements to cope with that.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? It's massive.
So all the stuff they're going to have to invent, and I thought, wow, if I can get in there, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, anyway, I mean, the reason I called you, wanted to speak to you, was you managed to get an interview with somebody on YouTube, Flat Earther, and I've written a bit about the Flat Earth myself, and I thought that was fantastic. How did you get him to agree?
You know, it's funny, when I publish a lot of my photos online, and there's usually a couple of trolls on there who are leaving comments about Flat Earth or saying that I'm a NASA conspiracy member and I'm just generating the photos in Photoshop and with 3D modeling and it's all fake and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And for the worst offenders, I always challenge them and say, well, if you really believe that, then why don't you come on and debate me live on a video stream, unedited, just one-on-one. And sometimes there are people crazy enough to do that. And I feel bad for the guy because he comes off very naive, and you know, he's putting his name to this crazy belief.
It was awkward. I actually couldn't watch it to the end, if I'm honest, because this poor guy, you know, he was struggling to just express his basic ideas, and I realized whatever he believes, that he shouldn't be going out debating in public, you know. And I don't mean that nastily.
No, it's true. And I think someone told me later that his wife is actually quite into science and she doesn't believe a word of what he's saying about this flat earth stuff. And she's quite embarrassed for him as well, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But I didn't believe that he was genuine about it. So I was quite shocked to find that this was a really dearly held belief for him. And he was willing to just assume that the world was flat based on what he could see out of his window. And that was literally where it ended for him. There was no any attempt to go further into data or measurement or science or anything. Mm. He was just happy to throw out, because ultimately it came back to his belief in religion and creationism. So that sort of shows why he wasn't willing to engage any kind of scientific analysis of spherical Earth.
Yeah. That's strange, that. It's very strange. I mean, I think I can... No, I'm lying. I can't understand it. I can try to sympathise with it, you know. But we don't want to be the arseholes. Yeah,
Well, it's quite paradoxical.
Mm.
His main thrust of his argument was that if he looks out of his window and he sees that the world is flat and he doesn't need any more explanation than that. And I thought that's a bit funny, because you can't just ignore everything else.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, it doesn't look... I can imagine somebody sitting on a boat in the middle of the South Sea, you know, where it is as close to flat as it can get, or maybe living up... Like out in the middle of the Free State, you know, here in South Africa. It's an incredibly flat area, massive plain. But... He's from New Zealand, isn't he? It's quite hilly there. I mean, how can he even see flatness? Where's he getting it from?
Well, it's ridiculous, I think, because if you've been in a plane or any kind of high vantage point, really, you can see a very slight curvature of the Earth. But he doesn't trust any evidence, even if he sees footage of the Earth from the International Space Station or anything like that. And he still doesn't. He thinks it's all fake, which is how we got onto the conversation, because I'd taken a photo of the International Space Station transiting the moon. And he doesn't believe that I could take an image of something that big flying so fast across the moon. And again, he just didn't have any understanding of how cameras work or how shutter speeds work or how scale works, you know, the distance between the Earth and the space station compared to the distance between the Earth and the moon, and how focus works, how it could all be in focus and that sort of thing. So it really came off as him looking quite naive. And I didn't want to bully him either. And I hope it didn't come across as bullying, because that's not what I'm trying to do either. But I just want these people, if they really do have the courage of their convictions, to come out and put them forward, because that's the only way they're dispelled.
Yeah. Excuse me. Always have to cough when the microphone's on. Hey. So what's the feedback been like?
Sorry, I missed that.
How have people responded to this? I mean, positively. I mean, I've seen obviously from our side, people have been very excited about this and very, I'd say, almost gloating about it. But what have you seen on your side?
It's funny. I published the video on the Global Star Party channel, which is a YouTube channel where we normally just broadcast astronomy, which can be a little dry sometimes. But us astronomy folk like to hang out sometimes and live stream what we're doing and show our image acquisition process, and that's always fun.
Yeah.
But we put it out on that channel, and within 2 weeks it became the third most watched video on that channel, just racking up thousands of views. And the comments are quite scathing. There's a lot of people who are berating him publicly. But there were a few people that jumped on the comments, at least on Facebook, who were sort of slapping him on the back and saying, good on you, Johnny, for, for standing up to the status quo and science. And so there is a little bit of an echo chamber with the flat earthers. But again, I can't tell whether those people are being genuine or if they're internet trolls. But I'm convinced now that this guy, Johnny Charlton, was definitely genuine. He genuinely believes in the flat earth.
I mean, I interviewed a flat earther once. This was many, many years ago. I was a kid, you know. It was a school assignment. We had to argue for something that we didn't believe in, like a debating exercise or something. And I decided that the craziest thing I could think of was the flat earth, you know, because it was something that you laugh at in school. As it happened, my father knew who the president of the South African Flat Earth Society was, and he got him on the phone and let me talk to him. And I mean, even then, I was 10 or 11 years old, and his ideas sounded so ridiculous, and he didn't sound that serious. I just felt like I was sort of in on this joke that the grown-ups were having, you know.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, that was but I just think it was just trolling. I really thought that, and now I'm not so sure. You know, these guys are putting so much time and energy into it, and they're so consistently badly argued. You know, it's
yeah. It's funny when the internet came of age. You know, mid 90s to early 2000s, it was expected that we have suddenly this access to information, that a lot of pseudoscience and superstition may fall by the wayside, because suddenly we have universities connected, we have easy access to information. And certainly it affected some religions, like Scientology and things like that, where suddenly all their secrets were just laid bare. It was easy to just go and Google search something and find out what it was all about. But what we see, or what I see lately, is a kind of reaction to that, where people are digging their heels in and going, I know that vaccines cause autism or whatever crazy thing they believe in, and they dig in almost as an exercise in being contrarian, you know, rather than accepting the body of evidence that is laid bare for them on the internet.
I've also noticed that it's made it very easy to present information, whether it's true or not. It's very easy to create a meme, or what do you now call a meme? Never mind the Dawkins thing. Get a picture of someone looking silly and write in a caption, and there you go. Proof. You know, you've established that politician is an arse, or that the world is flat, or whatever it is that you want to push. And it's the same with YouTube videos. I mean, video is a very powerful medium. And I feel like, you know, if you're coming at it from a facts-based or a sort of logically sound or a scientific position, you're used to evidence meaning something. And I think we've kind of forgotten that a powerful image drives right past all that. If you're already open to the idea, and if you're a little bit suspicious, definitely. And it's crazy, because it's
people
an old idea, you know,
emotional about it.
Making movies and anyway, I'm now starting to ramble, so you can take over.
Yeah, definitely, people are putting emotions before rational thought in this sense. And I can see that we have come out of a period, certainly during the 1950s, Andy, the space age, where we did have a huge respect for doctors and scientists and engineers, and people looked up to those people. And unfortunately, and perhaps because of their own errors, certainly with corporations looking into their own interests with scientific studies, and people now don't trust corporations with science, and that might be fair enough. Mm-hmm. There is a certain mistrust of science now, and people sort of go, well, science is dangerous and maybe we should be careful, and people are looking to a return to the old natural ways and things like that. And that's at the heart of it, that's quite nice. But big picture, science is still the stuff that works. And so I can only hope that we do, or science can at least get back to a position of trust and integrity where the general population can trust it again. Certainly when we have a political climate where we're being told that you know, certain established facts like climate change are not real, we do need to get back to a point where we trust science again, and that might be a long, painful path, but I am sure that we'll get there, because ultimately science is the only thing that works, and people can try other things, but they just don't work. So we will get there again.
Oh, that's nice and optimistic. I think you're right, you know, because, science has always been a slow process, you know, it goes down the wrong avenue, and then at some point it gets the flaws get noticed, and then a paper gets published and it moves on. It keeps getting closer and keeps refining.
Yeah, it's self-correcting, so that's the good thing about it.
Yeah. All right. I want to change topics quickly. You mentioned your astrophotography and haven't been published. Now, I also take a bit of photographs, but I have not been published. Sorry, apropos of nothing. you mentioned. Okay, so what kind of what sort of subjects do you? I mean, are you a deep sky photographer, or do you go for those big wide field nightscapes, or a bit of mix, or what do you capture?
Yeah, look, we all have a favorite something. Yeah. I'm a nebula guy. I just can't get past the nebulas. Mm-hmm. And we are both in the Southern Hemisphere, which is amazing, because once you start getting into astronomy, you realize that the Southern Hemisphere just has all the best stuff, no matter what you're into, whether it's galaxies or nebulas or globs or anything. We've got all the best stuff here. Mm-hmm. It's just bigger and brighter and easier and darker and wonderful. So any advice that I would give for getting your images out there is, and this is me personally, but I always give my images away for free. I think that's a good first step. Don't demand money for your images. I put them out in a very, very high resolution for people to download free of charge. Mm-hmm. I don't put a watermark on them. I specifically license them as public domain. So not even Creative Commons, not copyright. I license them as public domain, so they can be used without credit to me as a photographer. And I think that's important also to realize that we are competing with NASA. You know, they release all of their images to the public domain. they don't want any copyright or credit themselves. So, you know, what's the point of doing a subpar image and then demanding copyright for it? So my main goal is to get the science out there and to get people engaged with it anyway, and I'm not in it to make money regardless. So I think that's done me well, because when I do take an image which is fairly nice and people want to use it, particularly media outlets, they don't have to chase me down for copyright. They don't have to get their lawyers involved or anything like that. Mm. So consequently, I've had images pop up in books. They've popped up in textbooks, in big science books, popular books about the space station, all sorts of different books. And the authors didn't need to credit me. They didn't even need to contact me. In some cases, they didn't contact me at all. Other people have just shown me that my images are in these books. Yeah. But that's great. And most of the time, they do actually credit me, which is nice of them. They know that they don't have to get their lawyers involved. They don't have to pay fees. But they were nice enough to credit me anyway, which is nice. I would just suggest getting them out on social media. We live in such a visual time these days, social media, ultimately is all about images. We get onto Facebook, which is literally the concept is a book of faces. You know, it was all about photos in the first place.
Yeah.
And Instagram's all about photos. YouTube, all about videos. We live in this visual time. Social media is really a very visual medium. So it's actually perfect for us astronomers. And especially us IT guys, we have this a little bit of an advantage over the last generation of astronomers, astrophotographers, is that we're all digital and we're all digital savvy, and that we can optimize our images for online. We're good at processing. And so I think it's a great time to be an astrophotographer and for sharing your images.
I've got a long way to go still, but... Anyway,
well, we're doing a great job with this podcast. You're already up to episode 13 or something like that now?
Well. Yeah, I'm actually about to drop the 14th, and you're going to be the 15th.
14?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, just if I could just keep it regular, you know.
It's good that you do what you do, because it's part of the process of getting the science out there and keeping people engaged. And science is entertainment, which is a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why I'm doing it, you know. I mean, okay, part of it is that little thrill of being the guy that knows what he's talking about and everyone listens, you know. I could never deny that, but but it's important to me, you know. I mean, in South Africa especially, we've got such a, how do you call it, a self-image problem. You know, we love to talk about how crap we are. Compared to the rest of the world. And the thing is, yeah, we have our problems, but no denying that. But, I mean, we've got SALT, you know, the 10-meter telescopes in one of the best observing spots in the world in Sutherland. I say one of, it's no Atacama Desert, but, you know, we have astronomers coming from all over the world here to observe. And it's, partly it's just because we're geographically convenient. You know, we, at our particular latitude and longitude, we've got good seeing. And we've got people who really know what they're doing. And I don't know if I go so far as to say that we're the best in the world or anything like that, but people here just don't seem to understand that. And I think people should know that, you know. I mean, the history here, I mean, John Herschel was here, and Lakai was here. All the southern constellations were named from people here, and just to get that word out, you know, so that people growing up in this country, especially coming from some of the horribly disadvantaged backgrounds, can think that this is actually an option. This is a real thing that you can do here. You don't have to be an American or be a European or what have you.
Well, that's a good point, because I have to admit, I really, most of what I know about Africa is, and South Africa is from Die Antwoord and The Gods Must Be Crazy, you know?
Yes,
So I just have this image of you guys like trawling the streets with like lions on leashes and fires out of bins and, you know, the ghetto. But I know there's much more to it than that. Yeah. And you're right, because of your Southern Hemisphere aspect, there is a lot of history tied up into Australia and South Africa, and a lot of major discoveries and a lot of major plays with science have happened from here. A lot of the stuff has been named from here, and a lot of the astronomers came down from the Northern Hemisphere and spent most of their lives down here in the Southern Hemisphere, because they just realized there was so much to study, so much unclassified stuff. And it's really, really quite fantastic. And I think is the light pollution situation very good in parts of rural Africa?
In rural areas, it is pretty good. I mean, I stay in a rural area and it's not that great, but it's because the... Well, with our high crime rates, people have a perception that that putting floodlights up is going to make them safe. Which, I mean, you know, a light isn't going to do anything if nobody's actively looking outside, right? I always felt that all it's doing is making it easy for the bad guys to not trip over the rake and walk into your rose bush, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So as a result, these guys are putting up tremendously powerful lights, and It's bad. I mean, I walk into my kid's bedroom and there's a single light on the horizon and it's casting a shadow on their wall. You know, it's
wow, that's so crazy.
So the skies are still dark, but not much better than the sort of suburbs who I grew up in as a kid.
Yeah.
But if we travel further out, then there are some astonishingly good skies. But I imagine it must be similar for you guys as well. In the cities and the built-up areas, you can't see any stars at all. You move out into the bush.
Exactly. Yeah. But as soon as you leave and get into rural Australia, it's pretty good. It just gets black, like inky black darkness. So we're very lucky right now that something I petition local government about is to recognise that our dark skies are a resource. And it's a resource that can be exploited because people are willing to pay good money to travel for space tourism and to come and use their telescopes in a dark sky environment and to come out of the cities and to witness the dark skies. So the more they can preserve it and promote their areas as space tourism destinations, it's definitely a viable source of tourism income.
Well, our results are definitely waking up to this. A guy I interviewed a couple episodes ago, he runs a telescope shop. I think it's a part that I cut from the episode, but most of his income actually comes from being some five-star resorts out in the middle of nowhere. They would normally have sold it on come see the big five, you know, the lions and the rhinos and all that. And now they're saying, well, we can budget this amount of money, which is about the same as a small car. Let's buy ourselves a 16-inch Celestron. We'll put it in a little observatory and, oh, we don't know how this thing works. And then this guy gets paid to go out there for a week or two and enjoy this wonderful resort. And he's never at home. He's had my telescope now for 3 months. He hasn't had a chance to fix it because he's always on the road. You
know? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a good gig if you can get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've run out of everything that I had written down to chat about. So is there anything you'd like to plug or talk about or point people to?
I guess just keep an eye out. If you are interested in coming and seeing a southern dark sky, we will be running the Star Stuff Festival of the Cosmos here in Byron Bay in Australia in July next year. It will be probably around late June, early July 2018. The first one that we had this year was very well received, and it should be an amazing weekend of astronomy and science.
Great. And how can people contact you if they want to chat to you? I know you're on Twitter.
And so you can find me through... Yeah, no worries. My main website is geography.com. That's like geography, but with a D, geography.com, or byronbayobservatory.com.au.
Okay, great. All right, then. So I'd actually love to carry this conversation on. I'm really enjoying this, but I've just run out of things to say. So.
No worries. It's always a pleasure to speak to a fellow astronomer, family man, and IT nerd as well.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, then, it's been great. And thank you very much. And maybe we'll chat to you again sometime.
No problem. Keep up the good work, Alan.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.